This week's mailbag comes to us from Sarah. Lisa, I just had to share with someone who would understand and not think that I am just bragging. I have completed the 100 days quite a few times, so my house is basically organized. I have my four binders at least 75% complete. My kids' memory binders are up to date. I have been focusing on increasing productivity and creating more systems. I decided this winter I would make 21 goals for 2021 and break it down into 7 goals for each trimester. Well, it's only February and I'm almost done with all 7 of my goals for this trimester, and I'm over halfway to some of my long-term yearly goals that are listed for my third trimester. One of my goals was to sign up for a grad class. I decided to sign up for 2, and I completed one of them in just 3 days. I have a few days off of work, so I put in 9 hours a day and got the whole class done. Normally, I would have spent a lot of time on my house, but my house is done. I am almost done with my second online class, and the work isn't due until mid-April. Today at work, someone actually sent me an email after I sent her a bunch of documents and said how glad she was that I am so organized. It is happening, Lisa. I am actually organized.
Do you have an organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organize365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organize 365.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. I am super excited today to bring you a conversation between myself and Gail Golden. She helps businesses build better leaders. And as a management psychologist and consultant for over 25 years, she has worked with everyone from nonprofits to Fortune 1000s to create powerful interventions and boost the bottom line. Gail has been featured in numerous publications, including Fast Company, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, Today's Chicago Woman, Crain's Chicago Business, and the Chicago Tribune. But I've invited Gail on the Organize 365 podcast to talk about her new book, Curating Your Life, Ending the Struggle for Work-Life Balance, and to help you succeed at things that really matter. Gail, welcome to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
I don't do many interviews, as I told you when we connected a couple of weeks ago, but I heard your interview on a podcast, and I just knew that I wanted to introduce you to the Organize 365 audience because we here at Organize 365 are on a journey to move from reactive living to proactive living. And that's a huge mindset shift. And it takes a long time to right that ship and really realize that you are in control of most of your life and a lot of what happens inside of your home. And as you start to make that shift and you get your schedule organized and your Sunday basket going and you get your home organized, you keep getting more and more time. Everything you organize gives you more time. And then you get so used to carving out all of that extra time to doing a little bit more organizing so that you become more productive. And then all of a sudden, you're done. Like your house is as organized as it's going to be in this season of life. And then you've now amassed usually 12 to 15 hours a week that you used to spend in this reactive living. And you're sitting on all this time and you may be turning 30, 35, 40, turning 50, 70. And you're like, well, I never thought I'd be done with the to-do list. You actually end up done with the to-do list and you never thought you'd get done. It's like the dog that caught the car and you're like, well, now what? And in listening to your interview, I was like, oh, Gail caught the car and then she figured out what to do next. And I've given a couple of different iterations on how I'm doing that in my life, but I would love for you to share when you realize that, when you realize that, oh my goodness, I have more time than I know what to do with, and how you started this idea of curating your next season.
Sure. I'm going to start by just changing the language a little bit, because you may remember that one of the word things that I play with is I never talk about managing time, or do I have the time to do something? I read a book that was a great influence on me. called The Power of Full Engagement, which is about how to maximize your energy and be a peak productivity person. And this idea about not managing time came out of that book. And the authors said, look, you can't manage time. You get 24 hours a day. There's nothing you can do about it. It just keeps coming. And it doesn't help us to think about it in that way. Instead, let's think about managing our energy. So, for example, if somebody asks me, do I want to do a new project? Instead of saying to myself, do I have time for that? Because it's really easy to fool yourself and say, oh, yeah, I can squeeze that in between 2 and 2:30 in the morning or something like that. Instead, I ask myself, do I want to spend my energy on that? And the question that comes right after that is, given that I am using all of my energy in my current life, if I'm going to spend energy on that, what am I going to do less of? And if I cannot come up with something I'm willing to do less of, then I can't do the additional thing because my energy is finite. So energy is a key concept in the management of energy in terms of how I think about this issue. So you asked me sort of how did I come to this notion of curating your life? It actually came out of work that I did with my clients. I'm very interested in the way you framed up the question, which is when I've organized my life and now I have time on my hands or energy on my hands, what am I going to do with it? Because I guess I haven't met a lot of people who have followed your process, because most of the people I know don't feel that way. They're not there in the journey, if you will. And so they are feeling exhausted, overwhelmed, and inadequate most of the time. And what fascinated me was that didn't seem to matter if it was my clinical clients from the first part of my career or where I was a therapist. You know, single parents and stay-at-home moms and, you know, people really grinding it out. Or whether it was the high-flying business executives that I work with now, they all talked about feeling exhausted, overwhelmed, and inadequate. Men and women, rich and poor, older and younger, it seemed a pervasive problem. Meanwhile, we've been talking about work-life balance forever. And I thought, I've never met anybody who feels that they have a balanced life. It's not a concept which works. So I thought, well, how can I help people who are struggling in the same way that you're helping people with their disorganization and what did you say, reactive instead of proactive? The word I use a lot is intentional, which I think goes along with what you are talking about, proactive. How can I help people? And I started thinking about curation, which actually at that time was a word that was very popular. We were hearing curated wine lists and curated this and curated that. So what if you curated your life? What would that look like? And I began to put the pieces together around that. What would that mean if you curated your life? How it would be different from work-life balance? And what I was able to develop was an approach that works, that enables people to use their energy, to not fritter away their energy on the things that are really not important, to accept that there are things that we are going to do in our life, we're going to do them because they matter, but they're not the most important things, so we can do them just well enough. We don't have to be great at everything. Just something's good enough is good enough. And that if you do those things, then you have the energy for the things that you want to be great at. And that's the essence of what curating your life is. It's a simple idea. It's not simple to really do. It's hard work to really do it. But that's what it was about.
Well, I heard in that interview, you referenced that book, The Dynamics of Full Engagement, which I had just read the week prior.
So is it was that
like,
right?
Oh, yes. And I was like, oh my goodness, I am a high energy person. Maybe you can tell. In my podcast, like, I find that, you know, when your home starts to get organized, people will say that they feel less anxious. They feel they have more energy. They feel more in control. And so we can impact the amount of energy we have. But I love this idea of increasing your energy capacity, the ability to increase your energy capacity. And I think when you're doing what you love and what matches the season of life you're in, you tend to have more energy for that. Like, yes. So my husband is fairly extreme of an introvert. Like, I have my national convention 1 mile away from our house, and he won't even come to the hotel and peek in the door because he doesn't want anybody to see them. And right. His idea of a great night is when he has something planned and it cancels at the last minute. He's like, yes, I have the whole night back to myself. And we only do stuff like once a month. It's not like we're like so busy we need this time back, but it's so much energy for him to go out. But every time he goes out, he has such a great time. And he's like, why don't I do this more often? But the energy of anticipating being around other people and how much that is going to take out of him versus I might be like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I want to watch a TV show or do a puzzle tonight. And I get out and I feed on the energy of others. And I'll just be out until, you know, you tell me, Lisa, you have to go home now.
Right.
I won't lose my energy. This idea of energy capacity, increasing energy capacity. Can you speak to that in even just like one or two actionable things or questions people can ask themselves about that?
Sure. Look, part of it is what you just said. I think two things you said that are really smart. One is if you organize your space, then you don't have to waste a lot of energy looking for stuff, trying to find, you know, where did I put that thing? So that is an example of increasing energy capacity. Another thing is knowing yourself well, and that introvert-extrovert thing is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. It's not that introverts cannot socialize or don't have good interpersonal skills. They do. But for an introvert to be especially in a large social setting, is tiring. For an extrovert to be in a large social setting is energizing. You and I are both extroverts, I'm sure. So knowing where my energy comes from is another part of capacity. And then, of course, there are all those good ideas that were in that book that we shared, The Power of Full Engagement. Eating a healthy diet, exercising regularly, getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, taking regular breaks, not expecting yourself to work at full blast for 8 hours in a row. It's never going to happen. Taking breaks, pacing yourself. And also, introvert or extrovert, being around people who nourish you, who love you, who believe in you, who support you, not people who undermine you and drain you and, you know, talk about you behind your back. So part of it is the social context. But all of those things increase our energy capacity for sure.
Yes, I am a quick start on the Kolbe. I don't know if you're familiar with the Kolbe test.
Yes, yes.
We have everyone who comes to work at Organize 365 take the test before we hire them, just to make sure we're not hiring another quick start. We only need one inside of the company. Thank you very much. I'm the one.
Yes.
So every idea I hear is a great idea when I hear it.
Right.
It's if I think it's a good idea, the next day tells you if it's something we really should be doing. And so I have learned, as far as energy, I always have the energy for a new idea. I always have the energy for something different.
Right.
And now I've created a rule for myself that when I follow it, it all goes better, that I'm allowed to have all of the ideas that I want. I can think that this is the next biggest thing we're ever going to do. But we do not actually plan it and start taking action until the next day when I still think it's a good idea and I want to do all of the seen and unseen costs of making that idea a reality. And my team just told me today, they said, okay, so we're going to do this iteration that you want and we need 6 weeks. I was like, 6 weeks? They're like, yep, this is how long it takes now. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, like I have the energy for week one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hope you guys have it from here because my energy for this is gone.
Yeah. So, there are all sorts of things we can do to increase our capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Another key point is you can be doing that all right, and your capacity is still finite.
Mm-hmm.
It is not infinite. You cannot keep piling more and more and more and more stuff on yourself and end up feeling good. And that's when you run the risk that your energy is starting to go out into the things that are really relatively unimportant. And then you get to feel overwhelmed, exhausted, and inadequate. So once, even if you're doing all those things to increase your capacity, you still need to be doing the work to make decisions about what is the really important stuff that I want to put my energy into, the outflow. Where do I want that to go? What matters? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's where I want us to have our conversation, because Gail, I agree with you. There are very, very few people who are sitting on 12 to 15 hours a week that they're not really sure what they're going to do with. I think the majority of them are in the Organized 365 audience. And it is the weirdest. It's the weirdest thing when you organize a room and you realize you now have an empty cabinet and you have nothing to put in the cabinet and you live with an empty drawer or an empty cabinet. That's the first time you realize, oh, I'm living with some space in my house. Mm-hmm. If you've been living to max out full capacity, overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. In the process of getting organized, we don't just have a few. We have over 100 women who now have 15 hours a week, and they literally usually are in their 40s and 50s, and they're saying, I had dreams when I was a child of what I would do when I was quote unquote an adult. And I went to college, or I was a stay-at-home mom, or whatever I picked. Mm-hmm. And I did that in my 30s and 40s. And then I got overwhelmed. And now I've gotten organized and I'm in my 40s, 50s, 60s. And the thing I picked in my 20s is done. Yes. That career, that season of raising kids, that place I was living, that nomad traveling, that whatever I picked,
yes,
when I quote unquote became an adult, I didn't realize that there were multiple times you get to pick. I have multiple adulthoods to live. Yes. And I stopped dreaming about a future choice other than one I made between the time I was 18 and 22.
Right.
And that's where I feel the Organized 365 audience specifically, we look at each other, we go, well, we got the time that we wanted.
Now
and
what?
We figured out how to prioritize what's important and not important, mm-hmm. but now what?
Now what? Yeah. So what you're talking about is what I call re-curating.
Okay.
You create your exhibit and it works. It's terrific. And one of the things I like about curating versus balance is, balance is something you have to adjust every 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. Curating might last 5-7 years with some tweaks, but it's mm-hmm. an exhibit can stay the same for a while. But eventually, one of two things is likely going to happen. Either life happens to you, mm-hmm. you lose your job, a marriage comes to an end, you run into a health problem, a parent dies, COVID hits, things happen that force you to recurate. Or what happens is what happened to me. So I'm going to tell you that story quickly. From quite a young age, I knew that I wanted to be a psychotherapist. My father was a psychologist, and I just thought, this is what I want to do. I went to college, I went to university, I got my PhD in clinical psychology, and I had a successful practice as a psychotherapist for many years. Somewhere around year 20, I was sitting with a new client one day, and he was telling me why he had come to see me. And I heard the voice in my head saying, I know you. I know what you're going to say. I know what I'm going to say. I know how long this is going to take. I know how it's going to turn out. And I thought, oh dear, this is a problem. A client deserves a therapist who's more engaged than that. And I deserve work that engages me more than that. Mm-hmm. So even though I was sure I was going to be a therapist my whole life, to put it in curating language, I began to realize that that exhibit was coming to an end and that I needed to create a new one. So it took me some time to figure out what was that going to look like. Eventually, I decided I wanted to take what I had learned about what makes people tick and how to help people change and use it to solve some different kinds of problems, particularly how to help business leaders do their jobs better. So that first of all, it helps more people's mental health, but it also enables people to be productive and joyful at work. In order to do that, I went back to school and got my MBA because I needed to know more about business. And then starting in 2003, I've been working in the leadership consulting space. And I'll tell you, my exhibit is quite different. So that's an example of not where something, I didn't lose a job or something happened. I have actually lost my job twice in my career. I've been downsized. So I've done that kind of curation as well. But this one was really about me recognizing I need something different in my life. This is no longer capturing my spirit in the way that it did originally. So those are the two times something happens or you realize that you've changed that, mm-hmm. that requires you to do that recurating.
I love the word recurating because I'm very grateful and feel very blessed for the 20 years I was a stay-at-home parent. Like mm-hmm. that was definitely the choice I made. I was a college graduate and I chose to stay home with my kids. I wanted to.
Right.
And my kids are now, you know, 20 and 21. Like I do not need to be a stay-at-home parent anymore. I mean, sure, it'd be convenient for the dog, but that is not my life's purpose. You know what I mean?
Right.
But when you say, or when I say to Greg, I'm going to work at the office now, you know, and he says, well, what about, you know, the things that I did as a stay-at-home parent that were not related to parenting, mm-hmm. I feel guilty. I feel like I am choosing myself over my family, that my role at home is not quite complete in my husband's mind. And he really likes having a stay-at-home mom. I know I'm your wife. I'm not your stay-at-home mom, but there's guilt related to that. And then the other part of that in saying that, no, I actually am running a whole company here. Like it's helpful if I'm actually at the office or I'm going to start traveling and I'm going to be traveling. And I know you'd rather I be home, but for my business and for myself and for what I want in this next curation, there will be some traveling involved. I love recuration because it doesn't mean that the choice I made in my 20s and 30s was wrong mm-hmm. or that it was not valuable or it was not the best choice at that time. I'm just making a different choice as I'm, you know, turning 49, looking at our 50s. I'm choosing not only to be a CEO, but also to travel a lot. Please, yeah. COVID, open up this world because I plan on traveling my entire 50s, that decade. And then, you know, I have ideas of what I want to do in my 60s and 70s and 80s, and I plan on living to 100. Most of the mm-hmm. women in my family do. And so I have a lot of curations in my mind of what I'm going to pick next. Right. I don't think many women do. And I think a lot of women struggle like I do with the guilt of not physically being in the home if they pick a curation that takes them away from being at home if they were once there,
yes.
or if they worked in their 20s and 30s and they desire to be at home, same thing, feeling guilty that they desire to be at home in their 40s and 50s or whatever, when they weren't in their 20s and 30s, you should have picked that when you were younger. Why are you picking that now? Like, I think there's a lot of those thoughts we have.
Yes, yes. So I think there are two things here to unpack. One okay. is, honoring the choices that you made in the past mm-hmm. rather than, you know, and recognizing it's time for me to do something different now. But that doesn't discount that that was what was right for me then. Mm-hmm. You know, when I came into consulting, I had colleagues who had been doing it for 20 years and they were making the big bucks and they had the marquee clients.
Yep.
And I found myself thinking, heck, you know, what was I doing for the last 20 years? Why wasn't I doing this? Well, the answer was I had an office on the back of my home. I could integrate my work with my home life very easily. I was there for my children. I was not a stay-at-home mom ever, but I was a stay-right-next-to-home mom,
yeah.
you know. And so that was exactly what was right for me and my family then. Mm-hmm. But like you, when I hit the place where my youngest son was off to college, it was like, okay, you know, maybe I can do something different now. So honoring the choices I've made in the past, I think, is really important. The other thing I think you're talking about is something that I call the obnoxious roommate. The obnoxious roommate is that voice who lives in your head, who tells you what's wrong with you all the time, how inadequate you are, how stupid you are, how selfish you are, how whatever you chose, you should have chosen the other thing. You chose to stay home with your kids. Why didn't you live up to that college degree that you got? You chose to go out in the workplace. Why are you neglecting your children? You know, and I think that particular conflict is something that women in particular struggle with. But men have those kinds of conflicts and challenges in their heads as well. So dealing with the obnoxious roommate is a really important part of curation, of making the choices that enable you to be great and not letting that obnoxious roommate undermine your freedom and your determination to do what you're meant to be doing. What is the essence of your exhibit? And there are tactics for both recognizing when the obnoxious roommate is beginning to undermine you, getting a sense of where that voice comes from, and how to put her in her place so that she can't stop you from doing what you want to do.
Can you give us one or two?
Oh, sure. One of them that I find is useful for me is that I sometimes will get a grip and say, Gail, would you talk to anybody else like that? You have a friend who has decided that, you know what, she's going to stay home with her children. She's been out in the workforce. She's feeling fried. She wants to be home with her kids, so she's going to stay home. Would you say to her, what's the matter with you, you lazy slob? Other women manage to do both of them. You must be inadequate. Are you being selfish? What about what you should be contributing to the world at large? I would never talk to somebody else that way. So why would I do that to myself? It doesn't help anybody else. It's cruel. Why would I do that to me? So when the obnoxious roommate starts doing that to me, I tell her to shut up. This is not helpful. Go away. I know what I'm doing. So making the conversation as if it's between two people actually helps me to silence that voice. I think the other thing that's useful here is many of those messages come from our early childhood. Mm-hmm. When we were learning about what's right and wrong in the world. And those are really important lessons. Kids better learn about what's right and wrong. The trouble is that when we're little and we have little kid brains, it's very black and white. This is right and that is wrong. And we come into adulthood with those kinds of rigid rules without even being aware that we're still carrying those. And as adults, we have the ability to be more nuanced and more thoughtful in our decisions. I'll give you a good example. I talked earlier about the fact that there are lots of things we're going to do in our life that'll be just good enough. Mm-hmm. Because if you try to be great at everything, you're likely going to be great at nothing. Now, saying to yourself, you know what? This is mediocre and that's okay with me. Who can say that to themselves, you know? Nobody says to their children, sweetie, mediocre is just fine.
Yeah.
You know, we tell our kids, try your best. So we learn those lessons as children. If it's not the best, you're a failure. Mm-hmm. As adults, we have the ability to say, no, that's not true.
Right.
Something in between failure and the best, which is called good enough. And I'm just fine with being a good enough cook, or I'm just fine with being, I don't know, a good enough volunteer in my community. I'm just fine with being good enough at shining my shoes, whatever the thing is, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have to be great at that.
Gail, when you talk about how we come up with these ideas of what is right and wrong in our childhood, what I see happening to myself and some of my friends who are of the same age is that we picked what we were going to be in our 20s and 30s, and now we're in our 40s, going into our 50s. And mm-hmm. as women, especially all of us who had children in our 20s and our kids are going off to college, it's a natural time for us to recurate.
Yes.
Our spouses went to work in their 20s, and most of them are still in their same job, and they'll still mm-hmm. be there another 10, 15 more years, and they're not making a career change. And we are changing, and they're not changing. Mm-hmm. And during this time, we are proactively organizing our house. And in the process of organizing our house and getting all of our productivity, we're physically processing through that change from being a primary parent to being supportive of adult children. And also watching our children make their choices in their 20s and thinking, what do I want to do next? Our spouses are not going through that. They're not organizing the house with us. They're watching us organize the house. Usually they might participate in a couple of the rooms. They're not making a career change. They know the kids are getting older, but they're not seeing as big of a shift in their role of parent from primary parent driving them everywhere to talking to them on the phone. Their relationship with their child is staying a little bit more stable than it was, not as big of a change. The men desire that we continue the stay-at-home parenting role in the household so that when we make a new curation of our life and it impacts what happens to them when they get home at work, that is a paradigm shift for them that they're not processing through and they're not really like wanting. Yeah. What about that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to push back just a little bit because I absolutely know the picture that you're describing.
Yeah.
It's a very common picture. Having said that, it's not all men. It's not
of
all
course.
Couples.
Right.
There are lots of men and lots of couples who have different kinds of challenges.
Right.
But so not denying what you're saying, just want to be a little careful about
correct.
Generalizing. One of the things I talk about in the book is that a lot of self-help books, in my experience, make it sound as if it's just about figuring out what you want to do and then doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the reality for most people.
Mm-hmm.
We are social creatures. We are in relationships that matter to us. And if what is going to bring me joy is going to bring you pain, that's
yeah.
a problem. And I'm going to have to take that very seriously. So our choices are going to be affected not only by what is it that I want to do, but also what's going to be good for the people I love.
Mm-hmm.
Children, husband, parents, friends, members of my religious community, whatever it is. And I think it's very naive to pretend that people can just go ahead and make the choices and the heck with the rest of you.
Yep.
In my experience as a psychologist, that is not the path to a good life.
Yeah.
So, okay then. This is part of the challenge of long-term. Look, I'm about to celebrate my 48th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, I picked the right guy. I'm very lucky. and we've been together for a long time. But I mean, we were 17 and 18 when we met. So are we the same people? Well, in some ways, actually, yes. But in many ways, no. And the deal that we worked out at the beginning is not the deal
mm-hmm.
that we're living now, that's for sure. So it requires, I think, open conversation, and it requires weighing what is important to my partner as well as to me. It involves a whole bunch of communication skills around how to say no and how to express what it is that I want and need, and also listen to what you want and need. Heck, you know, if this were simple, we would all be living happily ever after, and marriage counselors would be out of business, you know.
Right.
So what you're describing is tough, but it's not impossible. I mean, sometimes it is. Sometimes people grow apart, and they simply cannot make a life together any longer, and part of recuration sometimes is ending a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, recuration can be done. It can be negotiated. It can be frustrating, can take some time. There can be some false starts, but it can be done. Am I responding to your question? Is that
yes.
helpful?
Yes. And I am very open with my audience that I like basically stopped cooking 5 years ago because there just wasn't enough time for everything I was doing. And Greg took over everything related to food,
mm-hmm.
the planning, the grocery shopping, the cooking, the taking it out and throwing it away. Everything. He does everything food related.
Yep.
And I would say in the kids' high school years, we became much more of co-parents. And I want to talk a little bit about the impact COVID has had on all of this. And one of the things I noticed is there were three different periods of time where Greg had to work from home. There was the immediate shutdown where we put him in the office and our son was not home and that worked. We each had offices and, you know, everybody was going through this very unusual time and a lot of changes happened. And then he went back to the office in the summer and then he chose to go to Florida to see his dad. I did not this summer and his office made him quarantine at home for 2 weeks when he got back. So that was a very short quarantining at home. And then as the numbers started to spike, his company sent everyone home again in the middle of October or November until just recently. And so he was home for 3 months. Well, in that 3 months, it wasn't just because he had gone on a vacation or because everyone was locked down. He was having to come home and make a change. But the rest of us, we didn't have to change. The kids and I, we were still working on what we were working on. And he was now working in the bedroom because we'd all, you know, played room roulette, moved everybody around again.
Right.
The first 6 weeks, we worked together at home. And that was great. And then the second 6 weeks, I worked from the office and he was home and I was not home. It was the first time I think ever in his adult life where he had been home and I was not home. And it was a great opportunity for me to step into the business and be on site where I hadn't been before. But what happened was he realized everything that happens in a household during the day. Namely, how many times I order from Amazon, which he pointed out often. However, I mentioned that I don't go to grocery stores. I don't go to any store. Literally everything I buy comes from Amazon or a Walmart pickup. Like I just don't go into stores, whereas he loves going into stores. So he noticed how many Amazon packages were coming, how often the dog would bark, and then how many repair people who come to the house, service, like he's like, it's constant. So one day he was at work, or I was at work, and he called me and he said, this is crazy. We've got this person, that person, this showed up, that showed up. I said, yes. He goes, well, this is just way too much. This should not be happening. These many activities at home, I'm working. And I said, it's always this way. Like this is what it takes to run a household with these people. And he said, well, this is just so much. I said, right. But when I was doing it, I was also raising children and working from home and doing all these things, like just trying to give a perspective shift. And I think that COVID did that for everyone. Mm-hmm. I think everyone during COVID had to try on somebody else's shoes at some point. Like they were someone that works in a grocery store and all of a sudden they understand what it means to be a first responder, or you're someone that goes into an office and you're essential and everyone else goes home, or you realize, oh, I guess I'm not that essential. I'm working from home, or I never wanted to work from home and I'm working from home, or I always wanted to try it and now I'm home, but I didn't expect that my entire family would be with me while I was doing it.
Right.
And we've had a full year of this now. Yes. And I think everyone at some level is trying to figure out, as the COVID restrictions upon us lift in different states at different times in different countries, as vaccination becomes a thing, as we learn to live with COVID-19, whatever that is going to be in our future, we won't forever live sheltering at home. What do we want? Like what mini or major recuration do we want to do as we come out of this COVID pandemic? And how do we really like process through that personally with our family, with the people who have depended on us in jobs, if we're not going to go back to those jobs? Or I know there was a big article that said most people will not want to go back to a 9-to-5 job, 9-to-5 in the office. We here at Organize 365, if we sent you home, we now have a situation where you come to the office 2 days a week, not five. And that seems to be working really well. They don't want to come back 5 days a week. What are some of the questions or things that we should be processing through during this time?
Yeah, you know, it's a big question. And there's enormous uncertainty, as there has been. I mean, there's one thing we've learned about the last 12 months is, well, I mean, we all knew that life was uncertain. But I don't think any of us in our lives had seen anything like this in terms of the other unpredictability and the anxiety about the situation in which we found ourselves. You know, at the risk of oversimplifying, I would say there are three broad questions. One is, what have I missed the most? What am I longing for that
travel.
I haven't had in these last 12? Travel.
Travel. Sorry, you know, is that not so supposed to answer?
Hands,
travel. That's mine.
You know, shaking hands, seeing the lower half of people's faces.
Yes.
What, you know, what is it? What am I? And that's personal, right? That's that's very individual. I mean, I like riding public transportation to downtown Chicago where I live and getting off, and there are the skyscrapers and it's like the energy of the city. It's crowds. A lot of people hate that.
Yeah.
But for me, that's one of the things I miss. So what are the things that I miss, that I'm longing for, that the thought of never having that again would just break my heart? That's question number one. Because those are the things you want to put back into your life.
Right.
Number two is, what have I discovered here at home? Now, this is, of course, speaking for people like me who have been working from home. Not everybody. I mean, the first responders and the grocery store clerks have been out there doing stuff very difficult. But, you know, what have I discovered being here at home that surprised me, that actually I kind of like this piece of it? You know, I've always considered myself to be a very early morning person, and I often wake up at 5 o'clock, or I make myself stay in bed till 5:30. But the fact that I didn't have to then throw on clothes, dash out of the house and head downtown for a 7 o'clock meeting, been kind of nice. Mm-hmm. Like maybe I have a 7 o'clock meeting, but it's in the third bedroom in my condo, which is where I'm sitting. So what have I discovered that I like that's unexpectedly positive, that if I could hang on to this piece, I would like to do so? That's question number two. And then question number three is, I heard a phrase that I just love, the new better. Mm. Not the new normal, the new better. What would the new better be for me? How could I weave together those things I've been longing for with these other things that I've learned to appreciate? And you know what? As always, you can't have it all. There's always a give and take. But what would that new better look like for me? And I think we are almost at the stage now. I mean, I've had my first inoculation, looking forward to getting the second one. We're beginning to see the beginning of the end now of returning to some sort of opening up of the world. It won't be soon enough for me, I can tell you. But what's that new better going to look? And thinking about it proactively, to use your word, is a very good idea. So that as the opportunities become available, I'm ready and I know what I want to do with my energy in this new world.
Yes, and I don't think any of us are going to put every single thing that was on our calendar February of 2020 back on our calendar June of 2021. There are certain things that we got used to doing them. They were nice to have. I think we'll look at entertainment different than we used to. Like, we definitely were used to going out to eat and movies, mm-hmm. and sports, mm-hmm. and like constantly getting our entertainment outside of the home. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how that comes back. Or I think a lot of people have enjoyed being home, maybe not as much as they are, mm-hmm. but they enjoy their homes, or they've made improvements to their homes. And a lot of people have had to struggle through personal relationships at home, and now they're stronger. Like mm-hmm. families, a lot of families are stronger, not all, but a lot are stronger. And I think there's good in everything if you look for it. There's good in everything.
Well, I mean, I think there have been a lot of learnings. You're right. Mm-hmm. Look, again, speaking personally, I'll tell you, there's a word, agoraphobia. It means like the fear of crowds and big spaces.
Yes.
I've coined another word. The word is agoraphile or agoraphilia, which means the love of crowds and open spaces. And I am one of those people. I will be out there in the theaters and the restaurants and the art fairs and the concerts as soon as I can possibly be. So there are people like me, and we'll get out there as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. And then there are the people that are content at home, and most of us are going to fall somewhere in the middle, and hopefully there will be a variety. I mean, I am so tired of looking at postage stamp size people. You know, I want to be in the 3D world, and I will be out there as soon as I can. But that's Gail. Other people are going to curate differently. And again, it goes back to that idea of knowing who you are, of where you are in your journey, and making the choices that are authentic and right for you. And that's what curation is about.
Well, Gail, thank you so much. Again, the book is Curating Your Life. You can find it everywhere that books are sold. I believe I even listened to it on Audible, didn't I, Gail?
Yes.
I have both the hardcover and the Audible version.
Oh,
I do that a lot.
What a good person you are.
I do that a lot, especially if it is a book. I start listening to the book. I was like, oh, if I feel like I want to take notes, I just buy the book. And then I mm-hmm. finish listening to the audiobook as an experience. And then I go back through and I skim the book for any details that I want. But I love this idea of recurating. We're probably all going to recreate at some point at the end of this pandemic. For you, it may be in May. It may be in the middle of the summer. It may be in the fall as we go into the fall. I'm looking forward to that time. And take the best. Take the best that you've learned during this pandemic time. And again, like Gail said, add in those things that you missed the most first, which for me is going to be redoing that book tour that was supposed to be in the summer of 2020. I will be doing it in July of 2021. Fantastic. We are going to have Embrace Be Virtual, so I won't be able to hug you there just because we cannot guarantee we could do that in June. But for me, my doctor said we're probably going to get vaccines in Ohio for general people by May. So I'm hoping to be fully vaccinated and ready to travel in July.
Good for you. I go for it. I my book was launched last April, just as the pandemic was hitting.
So shut you down. Yeah,
I was in August. A lot of plans went out the window. So
yep.
There you go. So good luck with that, and good luck to everybody in your audience as we recurate. There are all kinds of wonderful possibilities out there, and we can make them happen.
Thank you so much, Gail.
Thank you.